Welcome to The Vine Time with Melanie Bolduc. Today's guest is Kirk Venge of Venge Vineyards in Calistoga, California. Welcome.
Thank you, Melanie. It's great to be here with you.
Thank you for coming.
Our
And
pleasure.
So we were introduced by our very dear friend, Hunter Boone.
Yes.
Hunter, who lives in Florida, but he's from Napa.
Yeah.
So
Big
how do
shout
you...
out to Hunter. He's a good, great fellow. Good
That's
man.
it, yeah. And so tell me your wine story.
Okay. Wine story, it's not so much that I found it. It found me. I'm a native Napa Valley, born and raised. So Rutherford is where I'm originally from. And was born in this very small town back then. It still is. That was in 76. And my father's been a winemaker here since 68. And my grandfather was an importer of Eastern European wine and spirits, Western European, I'm sorry, a little earlier.
Right.
Western European wine and spirits. So he was bringing in Portuguese, Spanish, French, Italian, wines back in the 50s and 60s and other kind of things like that, cordials. My father grew up as a stock boy. That was in Southern California in San Gabriel and Pasadena, in that kind of area. And so he was working in inventory and just anything in the wine warehouse. And then one day thought, you know what, I'm going to go learn how to grow grapes. So he went to UC Davis about the time of Justin Meyer, Rick Forman, Christian Moex was there also at the time. So they had a pretty good graduating class back then at UC Davis. And he got out in 67. And I was, and I graduated UC Davis in 98. And so the winery and the vineyard was all I've ever known. It's where I grew up and always wanted to have my hands in the dirt and, boots in the cellar. So,
I love it. And
yeah.
so there's a very popular wine of yours right now called Scout's Honor.
Scout's Honor. Yeah.
Everybody's been talking about. So I saw some of this online and Hunter told me about it as well.
Yeah. Scout, this is the name game, and it's a fun one that my father originally came up with. The Venge label that I have, and now I also have Proy, and I make wine for other people as well. I have 12 clients, and Hunter was part of the very first one that I ever did pick up out of college called Sugarloaf Crossing. But Scouts, when I was 14 years old, Melanie, I wanted a dog. I was hanging out in Rutherford all by myself, and I really wanted to have a friend to go roam vineyards and fish reservoirs and all that kind of thing. And so I got Scout from the Napa SPCA, the pound. And
my scout was
because my
actually dead.
parents, yeah, my parents weren't about to go get me a flashy purebred lab from a breeder. That was not their thing, knowing that they're going to have to take care of it most of the time. Anyway, so I'd be off to school. Scout would go to Saddleback, my father's winery, with him. He was at Groth at the time as well.
Yeah.
So he was the winery dog. He'd just roam around. He's a kind of a chunky yellow Labrador. And I think he was six when I adopted him. And my gosh, I probably when he was 12 was when he passed away. He lived for another 6 years, but he was just so iconic for the winery. Everybody, left town. He'd greet the cars and lay in the middle of with the guests. But and when he passed away, it was in 96, and the 95 vintage was of Scouts of Zinfandel was in barrel. And so my father created 100 cases of a Zinfandel with 5% Sangiovese blend. That's how it began. It's a four barrel lot, mostly young vines in at the time. It's changed a lot since, but that's where I got it started. And it became a hit out the gate. Scouts Honor, missed the dog. Well, here into perpetuity. So it's fun at wine dinners to raise a glass all together to the pets that we've loved. And so it's an homage. One, it's about caring and giving back to animal rescue a little bit.
Right.
And then it's about memories. And today
Absolutely.
it's our most popular wine. That's our kind of our lead in and our door kicker, I think you would call it, throughout the country. Everywhere we sell wine nationally and internationally, there's Scout Farmer Present.
And so, and then the current blend is not just Cabernet and Sangiovese, though. There's a little bit of Petit Verdot in there.
No. So original blend again was Zin and Sangio. Today
Oh, pardon
it's
me.
you typically 70% Zin, 65 to 70% Zinfandel, old vine sources from throughout Napa Valley and most recently Sonoma County as well. It's labeled Napa Sonoma. About 40% Sonoma, 60 Napa. And then the balance, okay, so the rest of that 30 to 35% is built upon Charbono and Petite Syrah primarily with some Syrah as well. So
Nice.
that blend really resonates with people well. It's kind of a yummy, yummy red wine blend. We get a lot of great by the glass placement with it, and it brings awareness to our brand. We can't survive on it because of its price point is great at $40 a bottle, and it drinks like twice that much. It's a great value, wine to introduce people to the brand. So,
Sure, wonderful.
without it, we would maybe work a little harder out in the wholesale market, I think.
Right. And so you have national distribution then?
We do. We're, I believe, right now currently in about 25 states and about 7 countries, something like that.
Oh,
So,
good.
that kind of ebbs and flows a little bit with how the different states change, or if small distributorships, which we personally like to work with,
Of course.
change hands or get bought up. That's happening more and more. So, a lot of changes out there. It's an ever-evolving market, and the bigger,
Always.
RMCs and Southerns are gobbling up a lot of the smaller ones. So,
Right. I had visited Silverado when I was there. And no sooner did I left sooner Silverado that Foley Family Wines took them over. So it was all the like big change.
oh,
Yeah.
yeah,
But
big changes
it
in
happened the
wineries
day that
too.
I left. What's that?
Yeah, a lot of changes in wineries as well, where the
Sure.
big ones are buying up the small ones. A lot of these are,
Right.
off the radar kind of deals, and then they go. And it's,
So your winery is
but
a
we're
family-owned
small, family
winery,
owned.
right?
Yeah, very well. It's me. I own this. I have 2 children. I own it outright. With a bank partner, of course,
Excellent.
but both Vanke and Croy are family owned. Yeah.
Oh, good. And so tell me about you did consultancy for a little while before you started making your own.
Yeah, so I did. So I've like I mentioned earlier, I have 12 clients that most of which I've been with for a very long time, and a couple more recently. But my first out the gate was after college, graduating in 98. I worked for the family, my father Nils and Saddleback, and we started building the Vanke Winery. The first one to go up was in 2002, which is where Maris Winery is today. So the Foley Group, again, mentioned. So Foley Group bought my property, the original Vanke Winery. And so I took the brand, brought it up to Calistoga, found my property here. But at about that same time, I was consulting with my dad. We were doing some work together, projects together. And we disbanded that after about 4 years. But my first client outright was Sugarloaf Crossing, which is what Hunter Boone, he got us. He was doing the sales for it, which was great. It was tiny. We were doing 150 cases of Sauvignon Blanc for a woman
Right.
named Rani Riley, who unfortunately no longer with us, but she owned a really neat property over on kind of the east side of Highway 20 or west side of Highway 29. And then but Macaulay, I would consider my first like full-fledged client. So it goes Macaulay Vineyard, and then Honey, that was in 2001. Honeycutt began with me in 2002. Both of those guys are buddies from back in elementary school. And then 2003, things kind of took off with Trespass, Boccia Divino, those two, Jack's in 2004, and B Sellers in 2004 as well. So many of these go back in time. And I also have Trace Perlis, Implicit, Sky Devil. I don't want to forget anybody because I'm jumping all over the place, but Implicit, Sky Devil, I think I mentioned all of them right there. So I think so. If I forgot anybody, I
That's
apologize. I'm
okay.
kind
That's
of
okay. So
scattered around a little bit. I apologize.
every winemaker has a style. So what would you characterize your
Yeah.
style as?
You know, so I would say, you know, my father's style is what I kind of cut my teeth on. And so I remember back, Melanie, in 2000 and, well, even, you know, the 90s. So we're, you know, 80s. Gosh, let's say, you know, I'm a young guy running around the vineyard. It's 1986. I'm 10 years old. And I remember him really happy when we would pick a 23 and a half to a 24.2. Like the 23 and a half was always Saddleback or Groth, for that matter, Napa. And the 24.2 or the 24 plus was always going to be considered for reserve. And so that's how wine was made back in you know, 80. Groth got started in 82 or 81, 82. But that's how wine was made back then, and non-malolactic whites. Okay. So that's what I was raised on. We're low alcohol.
Oakville, I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Low alcohol Oakville bench cabs and Merlots, and then non-ML shards. Of course, Sauvignon Blanc, but Pinot Blanc is something my dad's always made. He loves that, bro. Yeah. But yeah, so that's quite different from what I do today. You know, when I make wine today, that's, and I always have really, you know, I make full ML Chardonnays. So, because I had to buck the trend. I wanted to get out from that umbrella. I was watching what more and more people were doing. At that time, I was real, really influenced by guys like Paul Hobbs, you know, Dave Ramey. Those were heroes of mine. Yeah, okay.
Met him when I was working in Danville. Funny, there's a wine shop in Danville. Met him at a tasting.
Yeah. No, both wonderful guys. And also Rick Forman. Now, Rick Forman's style is a little more reserved as well, but he was certainly influential with saying, listen, without wine style, without making something incredible and great, you're just going to be like everybody else. So that stuck with me when I was running around with his son, Toby, who has his own brand. You know, we were running around together since the day we were born, and much more when we were older and growing up on the ranches, you know, at Foreman or wherever throughout our school years. So so I owe a lot to, you know, the influencers of the day at the time, and Rick Foreman, of course, and my father too, because I was getting my hands on education. You know, so then Cabernet, you know, or Bordeaux varietals, I make, you know, somewhat of a bigger style. These are higher alcohol, hotter wines, but with balance, with flesh. I try to stay away from green edges in my wines. I like the use of oak, so long as it's got the spine for it, you know, that's for sure. But these are higher pH, bigger mouthfeel, rounder, maybe not a, you know, 25 to 30 year wines. These are going to be, you know, 15 to 25 year wines is what we're trying to make, but elegance and, you know, with texture, slippery mouthfeel, phenolic development, and structure. So a little bolder, you know, certainly with more alcohol, these are all mid 15 and higher sometimes. And to mid 16s, try not to reach into the 17s whenever I can avoid it, because there is that overly done and monolithic style. But somewhere between that and you know, the crispier red wines, or more old world red wines. I want to sound smart to your audience here this morning, Melanie. So, but it's, you know, but I do go for more of a blockbuster style. Now, when we go to make Chardonnay, you know, Chardonnays are picked nominally. They're 22 and a half to 23 and a half. So I'm trying to retain acid. What I do not like to do is ever add acidity, tartaric or malic. You know, in the case of whites, I'll use malic, and never want to, if ever I can avoid that, always blend a balance, but never adding acid at the destemmer or to the press pan for whites or what have you. Because I feel like it sticks its elbows out at you, and it really often doesn't go away. There's some finessing to it, but I keep the Chardonnays or the Sauv Blancs very, very on the leaner spectrum, you know, kind of opposite of the reds, but trying to be in context, you know. So,
well, I think that that's Pinot, what one should be.
I always try to keep Pinots in a moderate area where I can utilize native yeast. So Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, I try to be 100% native yeast, native malolactic for sure as well.
Nice. So this lends into my next question, organics. So are you producing organically, or is that possible, or
We have several vineyards that are organic, but as winery culture as a whole, we are not organic. We're very sustainable. So we do do a lot with sustainability, Melanie, from the vineyard. Mm-hmm. It's from the vineyard side of things, we are, no herbicides, no pesticides, the use of cover crops to the effect of 100 pounds, 100 pounds per acre, compost at 10 tons the acre often. Mm-hmm. In all of our own vineyards.
Sure.
But the thing that keeps us not certified organic is a couple of the sprays that we use for fungicide, and that, or pesticide, I guess when we say pesticides, we don't use insecticides or herbicides, but we do use fungicide and, you know, from powdery mildew and other things. So there are a couple there, because, you know, then you have to think about your carbon footprint, right? And that's such a hot topic, and it has been for 10 years. Yeah, is your carbon footprint. So are you going to put somebody on a tractor burning diesel, you know, as many as 3 times more often than you are with an inorganic spray that has more efficiency, with a greater prolonged reentry or reapplication period. So I'd like to see us do less in less compaction, less burning fuel, fewer labor hours as well, because certainly that's gone up. But then when we come into the winery, we have skylights in the winery. We have solar panels on the roof, so we don't get an electrical bill. We often work without the lights on, and it's a gravity flow house too here at Vengi. And Croy will be online like that. The same, the viticulture is the same over at Croy and Russian River, but we have to adapt to solar and what have you.
We call that sustainable. It's sustainably produced wine, but we call it responsibly produced wine, so that you're doing everything possible to not pollute the earth, obviously, but still keeping the integrity of the wine that you produce. If that makes sense.
And since I've been running this, I started making the Vengi wines in 2003, but I took over the brand in 2008 when we sold the original winery to the Foley Group and made it Maris. But I've been doing this the exact same since, you know, with the design of the vineyard and the winery building,
responsibly produced wines. Yeah. And any beehives? It was funny because when I went to I looked down the beehives. I said, I'm such a blonde. I'm like, is this biodynamic? And they're like, yes. And I'm like, oh, because I saw the beehives. But, you know, the great thing about the bees is they bring biodiversity to the vineyard, you know, not necessarily to the vines themselves, but, you know, it's great.
Yes, we do have the beehives, and it's fun. You know, actually we had in both where I live at what's called Signal Fire Vineyard and here at Vengi, we've had bee colonies, hives start outside. And one, you know, where I live, it's old dry farms inn, and in an oak tree one afternoon, walking the vineyard, noticed a lot of bees around and hearing the sound, because they do make quite a hum. And looking up at an oak tree, here was a huge hive. And so that's what kind of got us into that. And I think it was four years ago. So one of my employees at the time also had a beekeeping business. And so her name's Mariah. I said, Mariah, let's go ahead and take a look at that. And she's like, I can put that in boxes if you like. And so that's what got it going. And then we started it at Vengi, and Croy does not have a beehive per se, but Vengi and
that's
Signal
wonderful.
Is what we call it.
Plus you get honey too. That's the other
part. You can.
Invented food.
Yeah.
And so tell me about the climate change and weather and how that's affected you. I mean, or what you've seen over the years.
Well, good point. I'll show you, and maybe this really started, let me show you in, with all the fires and everything like that.
Oh, right.
It's
when I was in, Atlas Peak in October, and the people I met, the gentleman I met who had Binrock, had built this geothermal cave. And then he was showing me this picture of how his house burned down. Oh my goodness.
Here's our winery. I think it's in in view, but here's our winery in 2020.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you weren't affected, but it was right there, right at your doorstep.
It came right up to the back,
right.
Back
wow.
door. And so, you know, that's when it really dawned, like 17, I live on Tubbs Lane. It was called the Tubbs Fire. And then, right. you know, where I had my old winery was on Crystal Springs Road, which is right next to Glass Mountain. And so that one's called the Glass Fire, right? So these two events, 3 years apart, really got you thinking, okay, something's happening that is unprecedented. This is, you know, at a catastrophic state. Okay, so 20 weeks, so we had the fire, we were affected, you know, everybody's got to be, you know, boxed out of the winery. There's the sheriff security lines everywhere, you know, evacuation, right? So that was terrible. But then let's move to 2001. And I think this is where we start hitting 100 year events. We had the driest winter of record of nearly 100 years, if not over. And we got, I think, 10 inches of total rain. Yeah. Ponds were dry. You could walk across them when normally they're, you know, 20 feet deep. And then in 22, we move into the wettest in record.
Sure.
Or no, I'm sorry. It's the hottest of record. Sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. So 21 is the driest. 22 is the hottest. We were 118 degrees for 2 weeks. And that's no way to grow a grapevine. Right. And then in 23, we had 50 inches of rain. So the wettest of records. So these are, you know, 3 years of 100-year events that... and now 24 is looking pretty good. Well, you know, we're going to rain again. I think tomorrow is going to be Friday before Easter here, Friday the 29th. So of March, it's, but 24 is looking great. But and more normal, I think, if we get off to some warm, you know, temperatures in 20,
right.
in this spring, which we did not have in 23, it stayed so cold.
Right. You know, it's funny, when I was in California, all of a sudden the rain came and then it hasn't stopped coming since I left. So maybe I brought it. I was in LA in 2021, and then I left in 2022 and then came home. But but in terms of heat in the warming, I mean, has that affected your overall supply? Or, I mean,
well, yeah. You know, when we get those drought, like in 21,
right.
we had severe drought. I think we were down 20 to 30% in most vineyards. So
right.
scrambling a little bit for that. Great, you know, but these nature thinning events of drought or frost or mm-hmm. wind during flowering, the way nature can thin a grapevine is by far better than what we can do by hand or right. with
right.
you know, mechanical events. We, you know, when we get out to do crop thinning and crop adjusting, which we all do, and we have to in premium right. winemaking, there is no substitute to what quality we get in vintages right. like 08 and 10 and the hot years right. as well, like 12 and some of those that make incredible, very impactful and resonating wines. Wines you remember, the wines right. that you want to replicate, although it comes at the cost of the grower or the winery producing less if it's an estate grown product, you know, and that's where it gets tricky, but that's farming. That's the nature of farming. It's, you know, so cyclical and it keeps you on your toes. And there's always that real anticipation of what's this year going to bring. And I think as winemakers, that's what gets us
right.
So excited about this job, this yeah. love of ours, you know.
That's it. It sounds like you love what you do, which leads to my next question. What do you love?
Well, I think, you know, I think that, you know, of this, you know, I love the great outdoors and I love the coast and the ocean and being in nature and the sound of great music, but mm-hmm. the you know what I love about being in the wine industry is if I have been so lucky in my life to be kind of born into this, you know, native Napa, I love the seasonality of this job. I think that's the most you know, that to me is the highlight, you know, coming in and working with people as, you know, as that time of year dictates, you know, whether it's with crews in the vineyard, but because we're always winemaking. Anytime we you know, when we take shears to a vineyard, when we plant cover crop after harvest, whatever the case may be, we're always in winemaking mode. So long as you're, you know, agriculturally driven, I sure am. And a lot of my peers definitely are. But the, you know, that's one half of it. The other half that I love is getting to meet the end user. So when I get out in the country or visit with guests to the wineries, you know, and even sit down with a client, you know, and their face lights up and we have this conversation and no two are the same. That to me also is such a joy and pleasure, you know, and keeps you motivated moving forward and never getting tired.
Oh, that's good. Wonderful. You know, it sounds like you love what you do. So I'm looking forward to tasting your wines.
Thank you.
And maybe meeting you when I come to Napa.
I open invitation at any
Okay,
time.
Wonderful. That's
now
perfect.
We have our contacts. Yeah, absolutely.
And so I ask all of my guests this. Do you have a song for us today?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, keep it on the love thing we could do. And now it's a hit movie is One Love, Bob Marley.
Oh, there we go.
That would be cool.
Good one.
I, you know, I love reggae music and I always have since I was nine years old. And a neighbor of mine, John Lehrer, moved in next door in Rutherford and he would blast it, early reggae tunes. And I gravitated to it. And, and so always have. And so that, of course, is part of.
I think considering the state of the world today, that that's a very good song for us all. We all have to be reminded of Bob Marley's very, very wise words.
It's going to be that or red, red wine, but I think that's overused. I think that's a little too overused.
Exactly. And so, well, thank you so much. How do people find you? Are you on Instagram?
Okay, so yeah, good question. You know, we have the two wineries, probably the easiest way to find us and everybody's online, you know, is Vengi Vineyards. It's vengivineyards.com.
Yep.
And Croy Winery over in Russian River is croyestate.com. So with those two, you know, put it in the browser. That's probably the easiest way that you'll find us. And then we have Instagram pages also for both of those, Croy Estate and Vengi Vineyards. So.
And I'll include those in the link below.
But oh, wonderful.
That's thank you so much. Okay.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You too. Okay. Have a good one. Ciao. Bye.
Bye.